It's 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine, where in this next hour of programming, the opinions and views expressed are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or the University of California Board of Regents. Talking animals now, KUCI.
I can't look at the rocket launch, the trophy wives of the astronauts, and I won't listen to their words, 'cause I like birds. I don't care for walking downtown, crazy auto car gonna mow me down. Look at all the people like cows in a herd. Well, I like birds. If you're small and on a search, I've got a feeder for you to perch on.
That's music from the Eels with a song called I Like Birds, a double winner of sorts, an animal song from an animal band, as we ease into today's Groundhog Days edition of Talking Animals on 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine, and streaming live, of course, on the internet at KUCI.org, all by way of broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Right off the bat, I'd like to tell you that for the next hour, you can reach us directly by phone at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And I absolutely urge you to use that number and call us at any point in the show. Don't be shy. I'm telling you, we love to get calls here. Talking animals. Otherwise, we get a bit lonely at the KUCI studios here. So, of course, other ways to be in touch include emailing us at talkinganimals@AOL.com and checking out our wonderful website at talkinganimals.net. Again, yes, that's right. That's .net, folks. Also, before we move on, I want to thank Serena Sharp for another rousing rendition of the Serena Sharp Show. Meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources. But we're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. It's been nearly 8 months since we launched Talking Animals, and we've been enormously fortunate during that time to have a long string of terrific guests, including Dr. Sophia Yin, a veterinarian who's done pioneering research on dog barks and what they mean, Ian Anderson, the singer-songwriter flute player behind rock band Jethro Tull, and something of an animal advocate and expert, Dan Matthews, who is vice president of communications at PETA, is the chief strategist of the organization's high-profile campaigns, and not to mention a former Orange County resident. Meryl Marco, the Emmy-winning television writer, author, and creator of Stupid Pet Tricks on The Letterman Show nearly 25 years ago, And so not only are all the shows featuring these interviews archived on our nifty website at talkinganimals.net, but our string of exceptional guests continues today when we speak with Janine Garofalo, the comedian and actress who starred in such acclaimed TV series as The Larry Sanders Show and The Ben Stiller Show, and has been in such movies as The Truth About Cats and Dogs, Dogma, Reality Bites, and about 30 other films. More to the point, perhaps, for our purposes, she's a longtime animal lover and high-profile activist. And in an interview recorded last week, we speak with Janine about dogs, rescuing animals, the pros and perils of activism, and a number of other topics. So we'll get to that interview in just a few minutes. Meanwhile, in Talking Animals, it's time for our weekly look at items of interest in animal news. We're going to do a slightly abbreviated edition of the news today so we can accommodate our extended interview with Janine. So turning now to interesting or important developments recently in animal news. Typically, these are local, regional, national, sometimes international stories of note that seem important to spotlight and with any luck to get your comments on and discuss. We also try to include a few announcements of upcoming events or activities that you may want to pencil in on your calendar. So that said, let's talk turkey, as it were. Starting off once again, as we almost invariably do, beginning of the news segment here on Talking Animals, discussing Tiger Rescue. That's the facility in Colton, California, just in broad strokes, sort of near San Bernardino. It's been in the news off and on for several months. Basically, it was a so-called sanctuary, that's in heavy, heavy air quotes, where tigers and other big cats went after they ostensibly retired from TV, film work, and other road shows, and even things that are worse than that. So, but as it turns out, the facility itself had been neglected for many years, and worse, the animals there had been neglected for many years. So anyways, it's a very long, complicated story with all kinds of legal implications, but the short version is that the proprietor is indeed facing serious legal charges. Unfortunately, the trial keeps getting postponed, which is very frustrating for all involved that care about the animals and getting them set up in a better place and having this guy kind of meet his proper punishment, as it were. But meanwhile, most of those tigers and big cats are still out at Tiger Rescue in Colton, California. So a really amazing man named Chuck Tracy stepped up in all senses of that phrase, leaving behind his own animal facility, the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center in Ramona, California, down by San Diego, to basically sort of run the day-to-day operation of Tiger Rescue while things were trying to be fixed and improved and animals relocated and these really poorly neglected animals nursed back to health. So he's doing that, though, by way, and has for several months now, by way of a rotating battalion of volunteers who drive in from all parts of Southern California and actually in some cases now Northern California, and basically just look after these animals, help clean their enclosures, water down their tanks and cages and enclosures, feed them, repair things, set things up so they're more comfortable or can play or do stuff. It's really, really cool, and this is all by way of saying that if you think you could ever, if you live anywhere in the Southern California area, or even really Northern California area, and could spare part of a weekend, you know, or even a weekday, so much the better, because they often have a little more difficulty finding folks on weekdays to volunteer, it'd be really great. You'll have one of the most amazing experiences in your life, I can guarantee it, having been out there myself, and you'll really help these animals. If that's something you could do, just email us at talkinganimals@aol.com. We'll hook you up with the people who coordinate that. And meanwhile, these animals, these cats and other animals, will be relocated. In fact, the nice people, amazing people at PAWS, which is a huge, actually multi-facility sanctuary up in Northern California, have agreed to take the remaining cats. Some have been moved elsewhere, including the Austin Zoo and some other places. But there's still about 30-some-odd cats at Tiger Rescue in Colton. So PAWS, up in Northern California, is going to take them. I think they have a new 10-acre habitat that they're preparing. But there's still some costs involved with that for enclosures and other things that need to be dealt with. So I have a couple of thoughts on that, not coincidentally. One is that if you could just maybe cut a check, that's always a good thing, and just mark it Save the Tigers, so that it's specifically earmarked to help our little cat friends out in Colton, the Tiger Rescue, and then send it to the Fund for Animals. Attention, Save the Tigers, 200 West 57th Street, New York, New York, 10019. And again, if you can mark both the check and the envelope, to indicate that it's for the Tigers specifically. That would be most helpful. Another way, just recently, in fact, we're almost a day early on this announcement, but I just got a release that really officially is dated tomorrow. Well, let's give you a sneak preview, because we want to help these cats, and this could also be kind of a cool way to make things nice for one of your loved ones. So it reads here, the Fund for Animals announced today a special Valentine's Day auction to benefit a big cats in need. The online auction at www.fundauctions.org will run from February 2 to February 14 and provide creative gift ideas for your Valentine, all for a good cause. 100% of the money raised will be used to care for the big cats at Tiger Rescue. And again, a lot of this goes to the thing I alluded to before, the new 10-acre habitat that's being prepared for those 39 tigers to be moved to at Performing Animal Welfare Society, PAWS, in Northern California. And hope to have Pat Derby, perhaps from PAWS, on the show sometime in the near future to talk about that and many other cool things that go on up there. But at any rate, among the things available on this at this online auction include wildlife gourds, various unique wood-burned, hand-decorated gourds featuring wildlife images such as tigers, giraffes, and eagles. Lots of tiger photos, not surprisingly. Mounted photographs of the baby tigers who were rescued and nursed back to health at the Fund for Animals Wildlife Rehabilitation Center. That's, of course, where Chuck normally operates and where his wife, Cindy Tracy, is still kind of holding down the fort in his absence, as are many, many other people. Again, everybody's kind of stepped in all kinds of ways, and not only Tiger Rescue, but at the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center, and it's been pretty amazing. But again, we always need more help, more volunteers. And let's see, other stuff available includes a movie memorabilia and lots of neat stuff. So if you can, check that out, www.fundauctions.org. Get something for your honey, your sweetheart, and help these tigers, and everybody's a winner. On a more local, much more local note, our listener, one of our listeners, Julie, very devoted listener, and in fact, has sent a few story ideas and blurbs our way, which again, we always encourage you to do as well at talkinganimals@AOL.com. Just let me know that a friend of hers found a very cute, friendly cat who, unfortunately, is declawed, and perhaps even more unfortunately, really apparently is abandoned. So this friend has already found that this this cat is friendly with dogs and other cats, but really, really needs a home. Cat was found in Lake Forest, and they guess probably 1 to 2 years old. But it's not necessarily like it just got lost and is wandering. It sounds like it's sort of been dumped, unfortunately. So if you would like to find out more about this cat, think you might be able to help out or know someone who could take this cat, either email us at talkinganimals@AOL.com or please call us just more immediately at 949-824-5824, and we'll put you in touch with Julie and her friend, and maybe we can find this nice cat with unfortunate circumstances a cool new home. So sort of pausing in the midway, as we often do, for our instant quiz. Simply true, false. And, of course, the first person who calls in with the correct answer wins a prize. Big on prizes here at Talking Animals, as you probably know. So let's find something kind of cool here. All right, here's this one. All right, true or false, all 18 species of penguin are found below the equator, primarily in the Antarctic Circle. True or false? First one to call in correctly, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. We'll get a prize. And I mean, we're talking cool prizes. We've got CDs and books from past guests on the show. We've got, you know, various animal-related treats and apparel and supplies. And so we're not just kidding around here. We got cool stuff. All right, so if you know that one, call in 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. Again, the question, all 18 species of penguin are found below the equator, primarily in the Antarctic Circle. True or false? Also on the local front, if you've been listening for a while, you might remember back in August 11th to be exact, our guest was Tawny Lee Thompson, a really cool vet tech who, among other things, teaches a first aid and CPR pet class. pet first aid for cats and dogs. Pet CPR and first aid. All right. Whichever order of those words, that's what she does. So there's a few more of those coming up that she and perhaps other colleagues are teaching that I wanted to alert you to. Just a quick summary here is the five-hour course. It's basically Sundays, just one shot, one day, noon to five. Teaches individuals to recognize and respond to pet emergencies. The class will cover how to approach and handle injured pets, cardiopulmonary resuscitation, controlling bleeding and treatment of shock, as well as how to manage more common emergencies like choking, snake bites, fractured limbs, and poisoning. So you get a cool book, you get certified, not bad. So those are coming up on February 15th in Seal Beach, February 29th in Huntington Beach, and March 21st again in Huntington Beach. So you can call Trina at 949-586-4250. That's 949-586-4250 to sign up for those classes. And again, any questions on this or any other details that you might have missed or I might have bobbled, you can email us at talktheanimals@aol.com. And I think lastly for this edition of Animal News, might have heard about this. Or did you hear about the dog who got a credit card? Let me put it that way. I saw this on the Today Show and I found this on the wire. Just read it quickly. A pug in Northern California would have purchased his doggy treats with plastic after being issued a credit card by mail. The dog, named Clifford, lives with his owner in Livermore, California, in the San Francisco Bay Area. Clifford's owner, Steve Borba, said he was tired of getting spam emails, so he signed up for an email account using the name Clifford J. Dog. Eventually, a pre-approved credit card application arrived addressed to Clifford J. Dog, and Borba sent it in as a joke. It asked for his mother's name, he says. So I put Pugsy Malone. When it asked for a social security number, I put 90s. And even put that this was for a dog and not to send a credit card, Borba said. The credit card company issued Clifford a card despite the obvious warning on the application. After the card arrived, Borba alerted the company of the error and the card was deactivated. So there you go. I think that's it for today's edition of Talking Animals. Again, if you have any news stories, announcements of events, other things that we should be aware of, just, again, email us at talkinganimals@aol.com. Also, I'm pleased to remind you, perhaps redundantly so, about the Talking Animals website. We hope you'll check out the site at www.talkinganimals.net. That's .net, folks, .net. And join the email list. If you can just sign up for that, we'll keep you posted on upcoming guests and other announcements. And you'll also find archives and synopses of all the shows, assorted photographs and articles, all kinds of links, other audio pieces, and more. So please stop by and take a look around the site. Again, it's talkinganimals.net. It's time now to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which, as always, of course, involves an animal-oriented piece of comedy. And we're going to return today to the work of one of our favorites here on Talking Animals. This is Brian Regan with a piece called, fittingly enough, Animals on KUCI.
I lived in New York City for a while before I came out here. My apartment was really small in New York. I had a goldfish and I had to keep him in a shot glass. No, it's okay, a little pebble in there for scenery, so. He liked that. He was like, yeah, this is just like the ocean. I like to watch when he try to turn around there. Filtering system, I take a straw. It's like a jacuzzi room. Oh, yeah, oh, yeah. I think people are unfair to their pets, you know? Like putting a pet bird in a cage, that's pretty nice, huh? Get in there, clank, shut up. I'll be making the decisions. I was wondering what a bird's thinking standing in a cage. Hey, thank you. Hey, I've been blessed with the gift of flight. Appreciate the environment. I know how to fly, I'm standing on a stack. Hey, I've already read these newspapers. In fact, I've whited out some typos. I don't know what animals think. You know? You ever knock over an ant pile? Isn't it amazing that they all start rebuilding it that second? They're all running around. You'd think, you know, there'd be just a minute, you know, where they'd all get upset. And you just knock it over. Oh, man! I don't believe it! Look at this! Even if most of them started working, there'd be a few hanging off to the side going, I ain't doing that again. Standing right there, just gonna knock it over again.
All right, that was Brian Regan with a piece called Animals, taken from his CD simply entitled Live. The Comedy Corner is a signature feature of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and you're listening to Talking Animals on KUCI 88.9 FM, broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine, as many of you know. We also stream live on the internet at www.kuci.org. And of course, some of you no doubt are listening that very way. And I may have gotten there through our own nifty website, which I can't mention enough, obviously. It's talkinganimals.net. Before we proceed, I'm obliged to remind you that the opinions and views expressed on Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or the University of California Board of Regents. Earlier in the show, I mentioned that this week's guest is Janine Garofalo, the comedian, actress, animal lover, and activist who, arguably, I guess, really doesn't need much introduction. So let's go. In an interview recorded last Tuesday, the day of the New Hampshire primary, just as polls were closing, this is Janine Garofalo on Talking Animals here on KUCI. Okay, let's welcome to the show. It's Janine Garofalo joining us on Talking Animals. Hi, Janine.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good. Thanks so much for joining us today on Talking Animals. And I got lots of ground I'd like to cover. Not all of it directly animal-related, but let's at least start off Talking Animals. So, did you grow up with lots of animals around, or was it a family animal people?
No, actually, both my parents are not at all comfortable with animals. So I had to work my way up. I did manage to get turtles, hamsters, gerbils, guinea pigs, parakeets, and then finally a cat. And then we had three cats. Never could break the dog boundary. Never, never, never.
Just because they just felt like we didn't want to take on having a dog around the house?
Yes, and they're frightened of dogs.
Really?
My mom is no longer living, but so I'll say my late mother was frightened of dogs. My father is still frightened of dogs.
Wow.
But we did manage to, like I said, growing up, have the little ones and then three cats.
Oh, okay. And then as you kind of moved into adulthood, did you then have dogs, especially because then the dog barrier could be broken? Or
I couldn't have any till 1995 when I finally lived in an apartment that would allow pets. And then I didn't have one until I found one when I was in Utah filming a film called Clay Pigeons.
Oh, right, yeah.
And then I found my dog Dewey in Deweyville, Utah.
Oh.
And his name is Deweyville. And then shortly after that I was making a movie called Mystery Men.
Yeah.
In LA, and I was walking Dewey, or I took him to the dog park, and there was a woman who had a dog she found, and then I got Kid because he's the new kid.
Wow.
And so now I have two dogs. I briefly had four dogs because I was sheltering two dogs until another home could be found. So I had four dogs in the one-bedroom apartment.
Oh, my God.
Which was a little overwhelming.
And how big are we, like, just with Kid and Dewey? What kind are we talking and how big?
Dewey is a Ridgeback Lab mix, and
oh,
he
wow.
is now 100 pounds. Kid is a Border Collie German Shepherd mix, and he's 78 pounds.
My God, just there. That's a lot of dog for a one-bedroom.
A lot of dog in a one-bedroom apartment. Yes,
no kidding. Jeez. And how long were the other two with you as well?
The others, well, I had two miniature Pomeranians that were going to be euthanized from a pet store until they were fobbed off on Rick Messina's now ex-girlfriend. And you know Rick Messina. And legendary Rick Messina, comedy booker extraordinaire.
Right, and manager now.
And manager of Tim Allen and Drew Carey.
Amongst others, yeah.
And then there were two other dogs that other friends found and just kind of dropped at my doorstep. That my two dogs that I have now just would not be nice to.
Wow.
Would not accept because they love being the center of attention. And
sure.
They don't want to spread it around.
Right.
So then I had those other ones temporarily until I was able to find places for them.
And so you basically kind of rescued both Kid and Dewey and temporarily those others. Are there particular sort of animal shelters or rescue organizations that you're kind of attached to in New York or have a relationship with?
Legitimately attached to. I mean, I am attached in the sense that I go to them regularly to make donations,
mm-hmm.
one being Mighty Mutt in New York, and the other being Social Tees on East 4th Street, which is just a really nice man who owns a T-shirt shop who has taken it upon himself to rescue.
Wow.
To try and find homes for them.
Jeez.
Well, that's pretty ambitious for.
He's very ambitious. And he does a lot of really good work. I mean, he spends all his time and money doing that. I'm looking right now, rifling through my card file for his information.
But yeah.
It's Social Tees, T-E-E-S.
Okay.
Social, obviously, how you spell social.
Sure.
On East 4th Street in New York. And it's like around East 4th and 1st Avenue. And Mighty Mutt is, I think, not a Manhattan proper facility. It's like mostly a guy in a van who drives around rescuing dogs. I think he lives in either Brooklyn or Queens. And then on Saturdays and Sundays, he brings the dogs to Union Square Park for people to get to know and pet and play with. And then he puts them through a rigorous interview process if they want to adopt any of the dogs.
Yeah, in fact, I think I'd sort of, I guess, been alerted that you were a Mighty Mutt fan. So I looked around, and they have a cool website, which unfortunately is extremely complicated. So anyone who's interested, I would say to just put Mighty Mutt in their search engine. But it sounds really great in the way that it seems like they primarily focus on rescuing strays and just homeless dogs and cats, and then getting them fixed up with food and shelter and medical treatment. And then, as you say, once they're spayed and neutered and healthy, then, there's something like a very, very specific, careful adoption process, which is very cool. So
yeah, they don't want the dogs to be traumatized.
No, on top of what they've been through.
Yeah,
for sure. So Gene, it sounds like even though there was some family resistance, you kind of always felt an affinity or a sensitivity to animals.
That's probably true. I think most children do.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just natural that most children are excited by and enthusiastic about animals until they have a bad experience, if they have a bad experience.
Yeah.
It's most children's inclination to feel affection for animals because they also see a lot of animated and fable animals. And also, it's just most children are just nice.
Sure.
You know?
Right. Yes, they haven't been had a chance to lose that.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So, was there any specific event that you know, beyond just having that sort of childhood kind of feeling for animals that made you really look for dogs that needed rescuing or homes, or just that was just sort of just sort of built upon the childhood feeling about
animals? No, that was mostly Dewey. That was mostly kicked into gear by finding Dewey. You know, I'd always, when I went over to other people's homes or apartments, loved playing with their dogs, always knowing I couldn't have one until I moved into a place that allowed it.
Yeah.
But it didn't occur to me, in my ignorance, it didn't occur to me to actively go out and support animal shelters.
Mm-hmm.
And I always, of course, was inclined to prefer shelter dogs to pets. I wasn't really motivated, unfortunately, because of my ignorance. I didn't spend enough time thinking about it.
Yeah.
Even though if there was ever strays, that I would find in my life as a young adult, I would always take them in and then get, until I could, I would get busted and then, take them to another place. I was never a person who would walk away from a stray.
Sure. So intuitively, you were always like in the adoption mode rather than the buying mode, but you didn't really understand the distinction till later. Yeah.
Yes.
And this might be a small stretch, but did your feelings about animals make any difference to speak of as you were preparing and shooting, for that matter, the truth about cats and dogs, or was it just sort of another acting role?
No, it's anything. It's nothing. I just been, like any actor, you go around and audition, you stuff. This is just a script that came my way that had zero to do with anything.
Yeah,
and,
but it spoke to you on a different level.
No, it didn't speak to me on any level.
Oh, really?
Cats and Dogs was simply a matter of the producer saying, we want you to do this. I had just quit Saturday Night Live and been told my career was over and that I was a big loser and nobody walks away from this show, blah, blah, blah.
Oh,
blah.
Okay, yeah.
And then, lo and behold, 2 weeks later, the producer of The Truth About Cats and Dogs said, we would like you to do this. And I said, yes, that's it.
Okay,
this,
cool.
It wouldn't even matter if I'd read the script.
I see. All right, that was an opportunity. Yeah, and you seized it. I got you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, on a sort of different kind of note, but kind of long, identified yourself as a liberal feminist, and I guess like to get your insights or thoughts on any links you might see between, women's rights and just those issues and struggles and animal rights, to the extent that you've even, sort of looked at where those may line up.
I would say, to the concept of liberal and feminist, which is much maligned and much understood, misunderstood in this country.
For sure. Those,
both, all of being a feminist means is you are concerned with social justice and gender equality issues. What a liberal is the same thing, basically. The definition of a liberal is a person who is concerned with social justice, human rights, gender equality, environmental protection, animal rights, religious tolerance, and progressive enlightened culture. So that's all the same thing. What the mainstream corporate media and the right-wing politicos and pundits of this country have managed to do was take those terms, feminist and liberal, and turn them into pejorative, negative things that you accuse someone of.
Sure.
Obviously the corporate structure and the patriarchy do not like any of those things I just mentioned, feminist and liberal.
Much less of them combined, yes. Right. Yeah.
So they pretend, to, you know, through repetitive propaganda, is that to be a feminist, to be a liberal, is somehow to be out of step, out of touch, uninformed, elitist, you know, whatever they, you know, I don't know how they apply that there, but or a person that gums up corporate health or makes it harder for the good old American salt of the earth worker to get their job done. You know, the right wing and corporate structure of this country does not support liberal causes, animal rights causes, environmental protections, because all of those things take away the profit margin.
Yeah.
And take away the power of the status quo.
Sure.
So to be a liberal and to be a feminist and to be concerned with animal rights is the same exact personality type.
Absolutely.
Because all politics is no more than a matter of personality. If you are a person that veers rightward, you know, towards the Bush administration, towards Rush Limbaugh talk radio, towards Fox News, you are a personality type.
Sure.
And that personality type is equal parts Archie Bunker and William Randolph Hearst.
Okay.
If you are a person that veers left and veers towards Pacifica Radio, a little bit, you know, NPR, The Nation, the progressive Mother Jones magazine.
Talking Animals.
Talking Animals. Ben and Jerry's ice cream.
Right, there you go.
And their corporate model, such as it is,
sure.
it's much more kind than the average corporate model. Your personality type dictates that you are much more Gandhi and much more Angela Davis, much more Ms. Magazine, you know, whatever that is.
Sure.
Much more 1968.
Right.
And, of course, as you know, the right wing hates the 60s.
Yeah.
Absolutely
yeah, sure.
Loathes the 1960s because the 60s were a decade in which the playing field was as close to level as it was ever going to get.
Sure, and that's where it went to hell in a handbasket.
Yeah, and that's what they consider
sure.
The most threatening thing in the world, and that's because they don't want a world wherein animal rights is the most natural thing in the world, human rights is the most natural thing in the world, that the profit margin and the bottom line is not priority number one.
Yeah.
So it really is a personality type. So if you're a kid who naturally felt an affection for animals, never walked away from a stray, was never a person who tolerated the bullying of other classmates very well or got sick to their stomach when they watched bullying of classmates, chances are you've grown up to be a liberal.
Yeah, yeah.
And a feminist, doesn't matter what your gender is.
Sure.
And a animal rescuer type, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. No, I mean, it's all part of a piece, absolutely, yeah. And some of the things that you've touched on in response to that, I guess them kind of really leading into some other areas. For starters, I think I'd be remiss if I didn't ask about your reaction to some of the key revelations provided in the Paul O'Neill book.
Yeah, yeah.
And anything.
Well, see, they're not revelations to anyone who does their homework.
No, yeah, revelations. I guess I was furiously making air quotes that you couldn't really see on the other end. But yeah, it's... I just thought, given some of the discussions and other things that you had, that that might have been particularly...
Right. Well, you know, the Paul O'Neill book, which I have, which I really enjoyed, none of that stuff is news to anybody who takes the time. Now, granted, I have more time than the average person. I don't have children, and I'm frequently unemployed. So I fully admit...
Quit your bragging, yes.
I don't mean to brag, but I'm unemployed most of the time. But I have the time and the interest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's two things that a lot of people don't have, and
sure.
I understand that. They have children, they have school, they have jobs, things like that. But also what people fail to do a lot of times is take the time that they do have, and instead of spending all the time in the gym or on the computer with computer pool or computer Scrabble or all the things that I enjoy,
right,
you take 30 minutes, 35 minutes out of your day to get alternative news, which means Pacifica Radio, like I said, to some degree, NPR, reading The Nation, reading Mother Jones, reading The Progressive, or watching, if you're lucky enough to have international news access, watching international news.
Yeah.
Because it's the most important thing you could do to yourself. It's as important as flossing and brushing and exfoliating and 30 minutes of cardiovascular exercise every day. It's more important, actually, and one of the most important relationships in your life that you will ever have is the relationship you have to your mainstream media, news media, and to your government. And right now we're locked in an incredibly radically dysfunctional relationship with our government and our media.
Mm-hmm.
Because our government and our media treats us like punks, treats us like total chumps. They are as unconcerned with us as we are unconcerned with, perhaps, I'm trying to think of what a metaphor would be.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking, so interesting. What was at the other end of that?
I was going to say that most people are unconcerned with the microcosmic inner workings of dust mites in their eyelashes.
Okay. You know? I like it. Yeah.
Even though it exists all the time, there's dust mites all over your body, and there's mites and parasites in your intestines and all in your eyelashes, but you don't really worry about it.
Right.
Because they're just little parasites, and you don't care. That's basically the relationship that the government has. Their attitude towards us is clearly, they disrespect us at every turn. They are only beholden to and concerned with their campaign donors, which is, in the Bush administration's case, the religious right, big pharmaceutical, oil, gas, and timber.
Sure.
Those are the only people they cater to and the only people they're concerned with. And there's the neocon ideologues, which seems to dominate most of the policy making of the. Of the Bush administration, which would be your hard right think tanks like the Heritage Foundation and the American Enterprise Institute, and these very sort of radical neo-Nietzschean, if you will, thinkers. They sort of have taken the idea of Nietzsche's Superman and perverted it in the same way that Adolf Hitler did. Now there's all the don't say that, don't compare them to Adolf Hitler.
Cool.
But I will compare them to Adolf Hitler, but not because of genocide, but because of what he believed, that it was the right of special people in society
to dominate
other people in society.
Right.
And when people get all up in arms about any comparisons to Hitler, that's just, again, another time waster.
Sure, and a subterfuge. And
just a way to just confuse the issue.
Sure.
And, you know, with MoveOn.org, they want to downplay the importance of MoveOn.org and pretend that there's a... You know, Ed Gillespie, the head of the Republican National Committee, pretends that he's outraged that two out of thousands and thousands of submissions compared the Bush administration to Hitler's Third Reich. Now, there are very many parallels you can make to the Third Reich and the 43rd Reich, not the least of which is the use of the word homeland and the program called Operation Iron Hammer, which is being used in Iraq right now, which was also... That phrase was coined by the Third Reich, Operation Iron Hammer. But be that as it may, there's a number of fascist trends that can be compared, and it doesn't mean that you believe that they're anti-Semitic or they're committing genocide. And to pretend otherwise is to be a emotionally immature and politically immature big baby about it, and that's what Ed Gillespie likes to do, in the same way that they cried and filled their diapers over the Reagan biopic.
Right, of course.
It's another time waster in the same way that they pretend that Howard Dean was weird the last week of the Iowa caucus.
Yeah, I actually wanted to get to that in a sec, but let me ask you this, Janine, because now we're kind of squarely in this territory, just what comment you might have about David Kaye's resignation and, surprise, surprise, doesn't seem to...
Yeah, no surprise there.
Yeah.
And the only reason David Kaye is getting as much play as he is because David Kaye has agreed to, under pressure, blame it all on the CIA. Now, were he blaming it on President Bush and President Cheney, he would not get nearly as much mainstream corporate news coverage as he's getting. But since he is playing ball and saying, it was the president who was abused, if anybody.
Yeah, bad intelligence.
By that bad, evil CIA and FBI.
Sure,
Because of that, he gets to kind of, it gets its news coverage, and he gets to sort of walk away without too much damage done. But the, it is no secret to, again, anyone who did any of their homework that there was not weapons of mass destruction.
Sure.
Saddam Hussein was not related to 9/11, not related to Al-Qaeda, and was not an imminent threat.
Yeah.
So, and I love the way that corporate media pretends these are revelations. They are fully well aware of that as well.
There's
no mystery there. They've always been aware of real hard news. They choose not to give it to you.
Sure.
And I don't know which is worse, even if they claim they weren't aware, if these are journalists.
Yeah.
So what's worse, you knew about it and you lied, or you don't know?
Right. Well, and again, all the more, though, that someone that's really sort of out in front of it and very vocal and high profile as you were. I mean, again, as you were saying before, like all these, the animal world and other things are, you know, advocates and activists are all sort of hooked together. Given your experiences speaking out against the war in Iraq and the Bush administrations, I mean, what observations could you share about sort of the pluses and minuses of activism that is real, especially in your case, very enormously, you know, high profile and therefore under really heavy, you know, constant attack, at least for a pretty sustained period there?
Well, I would say the pluses, which are many, is you know, you're acting on the courage of your convictions, and it's an important thing to do, and it feels good.
Mm-hmm.
You also meet some of the best people you've ever met, some of the most intelligent, compassionate, interesting, exciting people. You know, because right-wing administrations and uber unexamined patriotism, pseudo-patriotism, and war talk always separates the chaff from the wheat societally and culturally.
Yeah.
At any period of war, at any period of or Reagan-type administration or a Bush-type administration, what you get is a real polarization of the culture, and you, like I said, separate the good guys from the bad guys.
Yeah.
Bad guys being on the side of the right-wingers, and bad guys being the pro-war, kick their ass, take their gas, contingent, bad guys being of the, well, we got to balance the budget, let's cut all the social programs.
Sure.
Type variety. So what you do is you get to meet all the good guys and gals.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say guys, I mean guys and gals.
Sure.
You get to meet all the good people. You get to meet all the people who either are Howard Zinn or inspired by Howard Zinn. I've gotten to meet Howard Zinn. And, I've gotten to, you get hooked into a whole group of people that care very deeply about human rights and about politics, and you learn all the time. You're always learning all the time from these kinds of people, and it's just great. Now, the minuses is you also meet and have to interact with and deal with the chaff, if you will, which is the, you know, people whose lesser nature is always on their sleeve. You know, people who are not particularly kind. They're paranoid. They are domineering. They are belligerent, bellicose. They easily swayed by propaganda.
Yeah.
Or easily desire to be swayed by propaganda. There's the ignorant and there's the willfully ignorant.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with a person who's just ignorant. I don't mean ignorant in a negative way. Who doesn't know what's going on so they support the president and the war. Then there's a real problem with the people who, what the heck, you know?
Right.
They're willing to go along, and because they like a good war, or they're going to profit from it some way. They're opportunists, and they also have a nasty streak, and they're a little bit racist, and they kind of like the idea. You know, Toby Keith types. You know what I mean? They like that kind of kill them all, let God sort them out.
Yeah.
Rhetoric, and it turns them on, and it gives them something to do.
Yeah, it's juice. Yeah,
it fills the void. Whatever's wrong with them, because there's a lot of people who are deeply flawed.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, they got a lot of personality shortcomings.
Yeah.
And unexamined patriotism is the perfect remedy, and tribalism and arrogance and aggression will fill in the blanks of their personality.
Yeah.
And then, unfortunately, one of the biggest minus, because there's so many pluses, but the biggest minus was realizing when I joined part of the news cycle, you know, going on mainstream news program after mainstream news program, interview after interview with mainstream news media, you quickly realize that you are on your own. These people are not your friend.
Right.
They are not here to help you. They are not hired, nor do they desire to inform you fully. If they did, they would not work for corporate media.
Mm-hmm.
Their highest mandate is don't get fired.
Yeah.
don't rock your
keep
boat.
Keep your job another day. Yeah.
And yeah, they. So one of the most heartbreaking things to learn was going behind the scenes at news organizations, talking to other young people mostly who work at Fox, CNBC, MSNBC, CNN, ABC, CBS, NBC, morning talk shows. You meet some very nice people who've had their illusions shattered immediately.
Mm-hmm.
They're just trying to go along to get along because the job is good, the pay is good, and the economy stinks. They are not paid to inform you.
Yeah.
In fact, quite the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
They are not there to give you the full balanced story. Now, Fox is the worst offender.
Sure.
In that Fox actually is a knowingly right-wing propaganda biased homeland information outfit. Roger Ailes, who is one of the head honchos over there, used to write speeches for Nixon. And Rupert Murdoch is a corporate, a corporate profiteerist.
Yeah.
You wouldn't even call it a capitalist. He is all about profits, and he is the owner of Fox News, among other news outlets. And Roger Ailes is a decided right-wing partisan whose only mandate is to perpetuate the agenda of the Republican Party, especially the conservative arm of the Republican Party. And that's why they say fair and balanced. They're also great marketers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they know what they're doing. Now, there's some people who don't know that Fox is full of it.
Yeah.
And there's others that know it, but they love it.
Sure.
It feeds their inner Archie Bunker or inner William Randolph Hearst. It allows them to be cruel and to be arrogant and to be belligerent and slightly racist and anti-union and to be uninformed and be really proud about it and feel really good about it.
Yeah, yeah. You know? And then let somebody like Al Franken, you know, co-opt part of that in any way that they don't like, and they're screaming. Yeah.
Well, you've got a bunch of bullies. One of the worst people I ever met through the whole thing was Brian Kilmeade of Fox and Friends morning show.
Oh, yeah.
He's the nastiest, most aggressive, unprofessional person I met in all of my travels through the news.
Wow.
He was the most belligerent, obviously biased. Like, at least some people hide it and are charming.
Mm-hmm.
He is in your face. He's no different than any schoolyard bully you ever met in your lifetime.
Wow.
Who would probably... Just prey upon the nerd, you know what I mean? Whatever he considered the nerd to be.
Sure, the weak.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He also will lie. He'll just outright lie. Or when what was one of the things I said that he said? No, he didn't. Oh, when I was talking about some of the falsehoods that were perpetuated, you know, about the uranium from Niger and things like that. Whenever I would bring that up, he'd say that. No, it isn't.
Wow.
No, it isn't. That's not true. He'll just say no.
Jeez.
And then what they'll do is, once you're gone from the interview, they'll mock you for like a week afterwards.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, it just seemed like there were so many instances of that just repeatedly. And so I guess I'm also curious, I mean, to the extent you can identify them, what were the – can you articulate like the career repercussions of – you know, even as you were being attacked, you obviously just, you know, you felt so strong, you kept going. But
hopefully,
I mean,
none. There are none. That's another myth.
That's great.
Perpetuated by the right.
That's great.
There are no career. Look, we got Tim Robbins and Sean Penn both nominated for Oscars.
Yeah.
There are no career repercussions. The myth is that there are, so that people shut up. Now, there are right-wingers who work within networks.
Yeah.
Who make a choice not to work with you.
Sure.
But it isn't a blacklist.
Yeah.
You know, there were some people who opted not to work with me. That's their choice.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously that's fine because I don't want to work with them.
Sure, yeah, it works out well. Yeah.
So there were some people who...
kind of fell away.
Fell away because they support the illegal war in Iraq.
Sure.
And they support the cruel right-wing policies of the Bush administration because that's their personality type.
Yeah.
And so that if there were actors who did not support that, they opted not to work with them. That's fine. I don't care about that.
Sure.
But there are no repercussions. because the mainstream population is moderate. They are not as right-wing as Fox News or the Bush administration.
Yeah.
So they try and manufacture that there's a backlash. You know, they will push as hard as they can until there's enough people to protest the Dixie Chicks that they can film it.
Yeah.
But, you know, right after the Dixie Chicks, the Clear Channel rallies, which were orchestrated by Clear Channel, the Iraq and Roll rallies,
mm-hmm.
where they distributed Dixie Chicks CDs to run over with a tractor
sure.
and posters
yeah.
to burn, I went to their sold-out Madison Square Garden show
mm-hmm.
a couple weeks. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right. It is, yeah.
So it is a right-wing perpetuated myth.
Yeah, they want that to be true, but it's really not.
Now don't yeah. misunderstand me. There are certainly enough ignoramuses to participate. You know,
yeah.
Toby Keith sells a lot of albums.
Sure.
So there's certainly no shortage of unkind, ill-informed people
yeah.
to burn a Dixie Chick poster
oh, yeah.
and to buy a Toby Keith album. That's fine.
Yeah.
But in no way do the numbers reflect the bulk of Americans.
Yeah, absolutely. And this may be kind of an interesting move into can I be among the last to reveal the news of your own impending radio show, which this may all sort of hook into? I mean, is that happening? And
yeah,
can
as far as I know, the Level Radio Network is set to launch at the end of March. And as far as I know, unless someone tells me different, as far as I know, I will have with Sam Cedar, the hilarious Sam Cedar.
Oh, cool.
The Monday through Friday, 8 p.m. to 11 p.m.
Oh, so, great. Wow.
Yeah.
And is there any particular format, or is that...
It's just news talk. It's you know, not strictly news talk. It's politics, pop culture.
Sure.
Current affairs, interviews, phone-in, comedy bits.
That's great.
It's like a 24-hour talk radio, but with comedy interviews and discussions of pop culture in addition to discussions of the news.
That sounds like it's going to be great. And I guess right now they're just trying to find where the different markets that's going to be carried.
Yeah, but, as far as I know, they're in something like 20 markets.
That's great.
They're trying to launch as large as they can.
Wow.
To make it, you know, to make it a legitimate news station as opposed to something that opens very small and then, you know, the
right.
critics can say, look, there's no
interest in it. Yeah. yeah, right, for sure. And although I've seen it referred just almost invariably as the liberal mm-hmm. radio network, that's actually, isn't that more of a description? I think it's actually Central Air is the name
Central
of it.
Central Air, but it
yeah.
is decidedly liberal, and
yeah,
we own
yeah.
that proudly.
Yeah,
it is
sure.
liberal, meaning
yeah.
truthful and
right.
concerned with social justice. Again,
yeah.
the only reason anybody has a problem with it being called liberal is because they don't know what liberal means.
Sure, yeah.
And because the right uses it against people.
Sure.
And in the same way that, unfortunately, so many people go, oh, well, I'm not a feminist. So what they're saying is I don't agree with social justice and gender equality. They don't know they're saying that, but
yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah. And Janine, we're probably just, running towards the end of our time here, but since we are talking on the day of the New Hampshire primary,
mm-hmm.
And you're clearly a staunch supporter of Howard Dean, and
right.
you referred to this a moment or two ago, can we discuss Howard Dean for a moment?
Yes,
and
I was in Iowa. I was on the side of the stage during that.
I have a scream. Whatever. Yeah.
Which was not immoderate in any way. It was a party.
Mm-hmm.
The supporters, we had just been blasting Kashmir by Led Zeppelin.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It was
yeah.
a thing that was supposed to even be for the news. It was a party for, there was between 1,700, 3,000 Deaniacs there.
Wow.
Dean
yeah.
supporters, and I say Deaniac with great affection.
Sure.
Who were there to celebrate with him. He came in third. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And he was pumped to, you know, have come from nowhere and still be able to move on to New Hampshire as one of the top three. And he was really hoarse, so he was really shouting.
Yeah.
And it sounded weird like that.
Right.
There was nothing weird or dyspeptic or apoplectic or unstable about anything he did, and there's nothing remotely weird about Howard Dean as a person, but it's just more evidence of the corporate media's bias to waste your time.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, and it's certainly just from the things I have read and understood that there's a huge contrast between if you were there,
mm-hmm.
as you were, And if you were just looking at whatever, you know, was broadcast from that speech, and that, you know, like anything else, I guess, but especially in this case, there was context.
You shouldn't have seen it.
Yeah.
There's no reason. It's just as lame as talking about the breakup of Ben and J-Lo. It is in that category of waste.
Yeah.
News waste. And they do it. You know, CNN alone aired the clip 637 times in a week.
Mm.
637 times.
Yeah.
The reason is so they don't have to do their job.
Yeah.
So MSNBC, CNBC, Fox, and CNN will talk about Ben and J-Lo and the scream, I have a scream speech too, because it's cheap, it's easy.
Sure.
It's considered to be a ratings getter, and then you don't have to really be an investigative journalist. And you can create mountains out of molehills, and it also, if President Bush did it, you wouldn't hear about it.
Yeah.
You know, it would be called a bold vision, passionate.
Sure, passion. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Focused. You know what I mean? He can do anything he wants. And, of course, the MO used to be Democrats are wimps. There's no passion in the Democratic Party.
Right.
And, of course, you get Howard Dean is about as passionate as you can get. And then he's just like John McCain. Is he crazy? You know,
yeah.
John McCain was threatening to destroy George Bush for the Republican nomination. What was the rumor floated?
Yeah. Not quite right. Yeah.
And not
sure.
Quite right. And then
yeah.
When they couldn't get him on that, the religious right floated that he had an illegitimate black baby because he adopted a black daughter from Bangladesh years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
This is more Republican nonsense and more nonsense from Republican biased news.
Sure. And then so how would you, since you've obviously been very, very close to that campaign, I mean, how would you assess his prospects overall at this point?
They're very, very good.
Yeah.
They're extremely good. I think George Bush is very beatable, and John Kerry, John Edwards, Howard Dean, are incredibly electable.
Mm-hmm.
To say otherwise is to be dishonest. And if the mainstream media did their job, George Bush, it would be a snap. You and I could win.
Well, I thought that's a strong ticket, I think, actually, you and
yeah.
I. Yeah.
You and I, I'll take VP. I don't mind.
No.
But if the mainstream media did their job and reported accurately on what Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld are up to, Woods, Pearl, what's really going on in Iraq,
mm-hmm.
and what really is the repercussions of the gutting of Medicare, the tax plan, the environmental degradation, all of these things, if they were truly and honestly reported, you and I, and any of the listeners of this, if there are any left, if I haven't bored them to death, any of them could win tomorrow.
Yeah, interesting.
Against the unelected man in the White House.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that'll be really interesting to see. And again, as we're speaking, it's just, I guess, returns are just starting to come in on.
Right.
As soon as
I hang up, I'm flying to the TV screen.
Okay. Well, then, Janine, let me let you get to that. But thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals. And
no problem.
We will keep an eye out for your radio show and the Liberal Radio Network and other cool projects, including, I think I just read something with David Schwimmer that's going to be shooting soon.
Yeah, in about a week, I start a movie with David Schwimmer called Dwayne Hopwood.
Cool. And I think Judah Freelander and some other really interesting folks.
Yeah,
yeah. So
happy
cool.
about that. I love Judah.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, Janine, well, thank you so much, and we'll just look for you out there, all kinds of interesting places.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right, bye-bye.
We want to thank Janine Garofalo for joining us today on Talking Animals. And again, that interview was recorded last Tuesday, just as the polls were closing in New Hampshire. So she has no website. She wasn't plugging anything. She just made the time to speak with us, which, busy as she is very, very nice, and we really appreciate it. So I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals on KUCI. In Irvine, 88.9 FM, streaming live on the internet at kuci.org. It's time now to proceed to Name That Animal Tune. This is remarkably like any version of Name That Tune you'd care to mention, except that in this game, the tunes are always animal-related, usually just by virtue of one or more animals being part of the song's head, but occasionally it's a bit more indirect than that. Either way, like most renditions of the game, we can only provide a brief snippet of the tune in question for a number of reasons, not least that while, of course, the game hinges on a song being recognizable, we also don't want to stray too far for too long from the KUCI music policy. With that preamble behind us, but also noting there's always a prize. Did he say praise? That's right. There's always a prize for the first caller who correctly identifies the song and artist. So as soon as you recognize this animal tune, please phone at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. I thought one of the many interesting things Janine said was how much the right wing hates the 60s. So we decided to select today's Name That Animal Tune song with that in mind. Okay, let's get started. It's Talking Animals on KCI. If you can name this animal tune, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. Can anybody name that animal tune? How about now? How about now? All right, well. Yeah, you can still call in. We're running a little late here, so we're going to proceed, but you can still call in. Yep, I got somebody. Hi, you're on the air. Talking Animals on KUCI, you're on the air. Can you name this animal too?
White rabbit?
Yes, that's correct. Can you name the group? Hello?
I don't know.
Okay, well, we only just asked you to name the animal tune. So what's your name?
Gia.
What is it?
Gia, G-I-A.
Okay, cool, Gia. And do you have any animals that live with you?
A cat.
A cat? Cool. Well, let me just tell you a few of the prizes. You definitely won today's edition of Name That Animal Tune. We have... you know, we've got a couple of books I can offer you, including one called For Bee, the story of the beagle, who changed my life. It was by an author, Kristen von Hausen, that we had on the show a while back. We also have the new Shirley MacLaine book, which is co-written by her dog. Let's see, we've got a lint roller that might be cool for someone with a cat. We've got safety collars. We've got some cool calendars, some t-shirts. Anything grab you there, Gia?
A t-shirt?
Okay, cool. I'll tell you what, why don't you email me at talkinganimals@AOL.com, and then we'll make sure you get your stuff, and that way I can find out how to get it to you or where to send it to you. But thanks for calling, and thanks for listening to Talking Animals, and congratulations on winning a Name That Animal Tune.
Okay, thank you.
All right, see ya. All right, well, there you go. There you have it. So, anyway, I'm Duncan Strauss. We've just about reached the end of this week's edition of Talking Animals. I want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or the UC Board of Regents. I want to thank again our guest, Janine Garofalo, for joining us today on Talking Animals. I also want to thank you all for listening. I hope you join us next Monday on Talking Animals, when our guests will be Joy and Craig Nadel from Rescue Me, Inc., a Woodland Hills Rescue Hospital and Sanctuary, also devoted to rehabilitation and placement. Going to skip almost all the other blather because we're running late and cutting into Jeff's time. So, again, I want to urge you, actually, to check out our nifty website, talkinganimals.net. And when you get there, please sign up for our email list so we can alert you to guest bookings and other events and announcements. And also encourage you to email me with comments, guest suggestions, ideas about show topics, songs, comedy bits, news stories, anything else you'd like to pass along at talkinganimals@AOL.com. I look forward to hearing from you. Please stay tuned for Jeff Scott and the Blues Disease, his great, great blues show coming up momentarily here. KUCI. We're going to close things out with an animal-related tune, as always. This is Luna with... with a song called The Hedgehog. Stay tuned for Jeff Scott. I'm Duncan Strauss. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Catch you next week on Talking Animals.
Wasting this is Knockout Greg from Knockout Greg and Blue Weather, and you're listening to Jeff Scott, infecting you with the blues disease.